Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast.
April 29th, 2016, Episode 94, Adventures in Beekeeping. Hi everyone, this is Kevin England here with another episode of the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. It's been 20 days since we've recorded and put out an episode, but you'll come to know why there's a gap since our last effort, because there's just so much to talk about. And to that end, I'm going to forego the typical format and simply talk about two major topic points as the bulk of this issue, and that involves sharing some meeting escapades that took place since we've last talked, and a long focus on the local hive report of activities over the last few weeks. I hope that everyone will allow me to take this liberty to deviate from the conventional format, as beekeeping is at the heart of what we are about here, and I think you'll find the commentary and variety of what transpired recently will fill out the episode and let you live vicariously through the start of our 2016 beekeeping season. So if you're at home, fetch yourself your favorite beverage and a snack. If you happen to be driving, sit back in the seat and keep your eyes on the road and hope that your commute is long enough to fit it all in. And for those of you walking around the neighborhood, well, be prepared to walk a mile in our shoes, as I'm going to go ahead and get started. I'll start this with a recap of our latest two bee meetings. For those that do not know, I am the president of the Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers Association, which is one of the 10 branches of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. We recently hosted a local field meeting for our association on one weekend and then played host to the rest of the state associations and anybody that wanted to participate as facilitators of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association annual spring meeting. So let's go ahead and talk through those events. So the first thing we'll talk about is the meeting on April 16th. This was a Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Actually, we need to rewind the tape a little further. Go back to Thursday the 14th. Bob Kloss and I both were late from work, but we met up around 6:30 or so, and we went over to SNF Honey Farms, picked up a hive from Stan that we purchased to bring up. SNF Honey Farms is Stan and Fran Wazatowski. We stopped by his place and picked up a hive to take up to the mentoring hive apiary that the Northwest Club hosts. We also stopped over to Bob's house and picked up a couple single deeps that he had overwintered. These were the hives that we built for the Warren County and Hunterdon County Fair last summer. We pulled bees out of our hives that were up at the mentoring yard and made observation hives, and then afterwards Bob put them in nukes and then single deeps and overwintered them, and we were returning them to the yard. I've said this a lot of times, but it bears repeating. Unfortunately, we lost our hives there last year to yellow jacket attacks, and that's all I'm going to say because people have heard this over and over again, but this is how we restored order there. The other thing was, on April 14th, Stan brought bees up from Georgia, and we purchased two packages for installation for part of the meeting. So going to the meeting day, April 16th, beautiful day, perfect day for bees. It's the first warm day of the year, and we had a lot of objectives on our plate. Had used the trailer to bring the bees up there that I have, and I used the trailer again on that Saturday morning to bring a ladder and the swarm jib that I talked about in previous episodes. We took a swarm trap, and the first objective of the meeting was to show people the swarm jib and bring a trap up. And I had a new feature for this meeting is my son has a GoPro, and we strapped the GoPro to a harness that sits on the left shoulder. And I was able to climb the ladder and try to secure the swarm trap after raising it for the jib. And the neat thing about this meeting is our attendance for the last couple of meetings was a little lighter than I would appreciate for the work that goes into them. But this meeting, we had quite a few people there. Well, as it would be, we put the swarm trap up. And when we went to stretch the chains around the tree trunk that we chose, it was one link too short. It's just really frustrating because it was so close. So we ended up actually lowering it back down to the ground. But it provided the opportunity to talk to the crowd about swarm traps, how to put them up, how to place them, show the swarm jib. And we had a probably 15-20 minute question and answer session for everybody in attendance about trapping swarms and using swarm traps and how to set them out and things like that. So it was pretty productive. But actually, the main objective of the meeting was to do package installs and to also do a hive inspection on that hive that we brought up and check out those two singles because we hadn't been in them. So we gathered everybody back up and brought them back to the hives. And the first thing we wanted to do was the package install. And we were doing it into a Langstroth box. But I wanted to show a new method that I found on the internet from Jim Tew. T-E-W is the last name. Jim, a lot of people will recognize as someone who writes for Bee Culture magazine and is pretty well known as a bee researcher. I'm not a subscriber to Bee Culture magazine. I try not to read it if I can help it, at least. You know, I have a bunch of old issues or whatever that I look through every once in a while, but I think it would skew my journalistic jaunt here. So, but I know that James is someone that reports there, and I went, pause the tape here for a second, and went and got it. It says, James Tew, State Specialist Beekeeping, the Alabama Cooperative Extension System for Auburn University. I'm not sure if James is still there or retired. I don't follow bee culture that much. So no offense. I think it's a spectacular magazine, by the way. And I do try to look at them, but when I start reading the articles, excuse my slant in providing information for the podcast, and I don't want to be journalistically stealing ideas and thoughts and notions. Anyway, I'm off on a Kevin moment here. I found a tape that Jim did of an install in the rain of a package, and I don't know if it was out of necessity or because he developed a new methodology, but I really liked the way he installed that from the video, and I did find the mention of that video in an old Bee Culture article and looked it up, and I'll provide a link in the show notes. But in essence, what he did was he had a single deep, and this is what we showed everybody, had a single deep ready to go with all the frames in it. And instead of turning the package over and dumping the package in the conventional way that you see a lot of times on instructions for installing packages, he took the plywood little piece off, the Luon, he took the can out, he took the queen out, and he just took the package and laid it on top of the frames. He took the queen, checked her, pulled the cork, dipped it in bees so that the whole cage, the queen cage, was covered in bees, and he set it down right next to the package, which was laying on its side. So the hole the can came out of is sitting there, the package is on its side, and he sets the queen down, and then he takes the little piece of wood that he pried off the top, and he lays it over top of the queen cage. Premise of this is that the queen cage is covered with bees and it has a queen, so it'll entice them to come out of the package, and then they'll just go down and make a home in the box. And so that was the method we showed, and the primary objective of doing it that way is it's a no-shake method. I go back to the Gardner apiary presentation that we put up on our YouTube and the talk that Mike Gardner gave, where he thinks the bees are handled rough enough when they're putting packages together and things like that. And his recommendation is not to shake them in a box if you can help it. And so I like this method that Jim did, and that's what we described to everybody. And we went through the step-by-step process, and actually we shot video since I had my camera repaired. and we're able to put that up on the internet. I did produce it over the last week, but unfortunately, something's wrong in the mix, and it kept crashing through the middle. And I think yesterday I finished it, and you'll probably see it up by the weekend. There's something wrong right in the middle of it, but that's okay. Most of the information about how to install was there, and you'll hear my commentary. And if you want to know how to install a package or just curious, you can go up and watch the video this weekend. So we finished the package install in the Langstroth hive, and then what we showed was the package install for the top bar hive that we have. So a beekeeper who had a lot of excess equipment donated a couple top bar hives to our club. And we installed the package in one, and I used the Wyatt Mangum, I think that's how you say his name, method for installing. And that is a dump method. There's not enough room for you to lay the package over and let it out here. So we installed it in the top bar by clipping the queen to one of the bars after dipping her in bees and letting her hang. And then you dump all the bees in and you spread them out so that they'll walk up the sides and come up to the bars and cover your queen. The interesting aspect of this that we were unaware of and didn't understand until later in the meeting was that we put all the bees in this box and they immediately started emptying and coming out of the box and flying around. We knew that there were a significant number of bees up in the air the whole time. And we saw what was robbing activity at all the different hive entrances. We actually mistook it for robbing activity. It was actually all the bees exiting the top bar and abandoning their queen and trying to go in all the other hives. And everybody was trying to defend and figure out what the heck was going on with this onslaught of a package of bees trying to enter into the other hives that we had on the property. So all the while being oblivious, all these bees flying around, we moved on to our next objective, which was the inspection of the full hive that we brought up on the Thursday before. This was two deep boxes on a bottom board, and on top of that there was a medium box with a lot of honey in it. We didn't know what this hive was. We didn't get a chance to inspect it beforehand, so we were prepared to do a split because every hive that I've seen so far this spring has just been loaded with bees. So we started to do the inspection of this hive. And the first thing we noticed when we popped the inner cover was that it was a 9-frame box. So there's a preference in beekeeping sometimes for people to run 9 frames in a 10-frame box instead of all 10 frames. And Stan does that apparently in his hives. And I knew that. But Stan does something different. I run 9 frames in some of my hives. But what I do is I squeeze all 9 frames together and then I center them between the two outside walls. What Stan does, and I'm thinking of something that just came to mind. Stan had all 9 frames, and he had them pushed over to one side and then left a bigger gap on the one end. And what do the bees do when they have a large gap? They build comb. So immediately there was a lesson about 9 frames and open space and violation of bee space and that they will build burr comb there. Burr comb is what we always call it around here. I don't know what you guys call it. Bridge comb is another term for it and so on. So the first things first was we had to scrape all that comb off and cut it off. Some of it had a little bit of honey in it, so we had to be careful that we didn't get honey all over. And remember what we said, there's bees flying all over the place. So coming back to that epiphany I had a moment ago that broke my train of thought, I know one of the things Stan does is he has 9 frames in the box, and his 10th frame is an internal feeder. And he usually puts that internal feeder on the side where that gap was. So maybe that's why his honey box had 9 frames in it and they were pushed to the side. Because he was setting them over top of the frames below, which was 9 frames and a feeder on the outside. That's a magic epiphany I just had. How about that? So anyway, we continued to do the inspection of that hive. We went through the top, found it was loaded with honey and resources and lots of bees. We popped that box off. We went down into the next one. And one of the objectives you always have when you have a new crowd of beekeepers, some people who haven't received their bees yet or just installed packages that weekend, is to show them what's going on inside the hive. We take liberties with our mentoring hives and tear them apart sometimes for the purpose of teaching. That's what they're there for. But part of what we teach is that you really don't need to go to the bottom board on all these boxes if you find certain things. So as you would suspect with a fully running hive in the spring that had a chance to go get some nectar and has been out seeking pollen, it was set up perfectly for a demonstration. The outside frames were capped honey all the way through. Full frame capped all the way, so we get to pull out the frame and pass it around and show everybody what capped honey looks like. Frame number two is a mix of capped honey. It's a mix of pollen and new nectar. And the one side is mostly nectar and capped honey, and the inside is nectar and pollen. And then the next frame in is a combination like that, but the one that's facing the inside of the hive has more pollen because it's now close to brood, and the next frame is a brood frame. So we're passing the frames around, showing people the way that the hive is laying out, talking about putting the frames back in the order that you found them, and explaining how the bees arranged the brood nest. In the middle, right next to them, is pollen and resources. And on the outside is the storage cabinet where they put their capped honey when they need it. They'll go get it later. So we also showed them eggs, and we showed them larvae, and we showed them drones and other things. But we did not find the queen in that top box. We had a lot of objectives to go through that day, and we knew that the other boxes were smaller and easier to find a queen. And we really didn't want to disrupt this hive any more than it had to. We had just moved it in a couple days earlier. So we forego the aspect of trying to find the queen in there. What we did find is eggs that were relatively fresh. So we know we have a queen in there. And it looked like a real strong and healthy box, and it was in good shape. So we buttoned it up, put it back together, and left it and moved on to the next two hives, which were single deeps, the ones that Bob had overwintered, and we did some inspections on those. I think Bob went through those and did find the queen, and we were able to show everybody what a queen looked like. And the inspections were pretty good. And then it was at that time that we discovered that all the bees had vacated the top bar hive. We went back to show everybody the package hive install that we did in the Langstroth box, and it was probably an hour and a half, 2 hours later, after we had done a number of things, including build some foundation frames and whatever, but all the bees had come out of the package and were entering into the hive, and that hive did what we wanted it to do. When we went to go see how they were making out in the top bar, we found out the hive was empty. So we had to take apart all three of the other boxes, the one I did the first inspection and the other two shorts, and shake bees back into the top bar so that the queen would have bees in a colony to start with. So we got out the blue tape, Bob's favorite blue tape. We taped the top bar all the way up. And then we pulled brood frames out of all the other boxes and frames of excess bees, and we shook them into the top bar and closed it all up and locked them inside. And subsequently, we've been back to that, and I think the report was that the bees are in there, and hopefully they're working on building comb and keeping that queen company. It would have been a real travesty to lose the package on day one, and it's a good thing we discovered that the bees absconded out of there. But, you know, mental note, locked in the vault, installing a package in a top bar or other hives, you really want to consider locking it up, and that comes into play a little bit later when I talk to you about some of the operations in my own yard. So we wrap things up there. Had a pretty successful day and happy to see a lot of people there. And keep an eye up on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/NWNJBA. Whatever footage I can throw together when I get time, I'll be putting it up there. And you'll be able to see visually, if you're interested, some of the things we talked about. I was pretty summary in my recall of what we did here. So that was weekend number one, April 16th. This past Saturday, we had the state meeting. And like the meeting before, on the Thursday night prior to, we ended up transporting some bees. So back to Stan's house, picked up another hive. And this time it was Jim Schmalz and I, one of my officers, made the run up to Basking Ridge to drop the hives off at the Fellowship Deaconry where the meeting was going to be held on Saturday the 23rd. So it was almost a carbon copy of the state meeting we ran last year in that the day started with rain in the morning and a threatening forecast. It literally rained on the drive up route 287 to get off 78 East and the exit 33 to Basking Ridge. And there were a couple sprinkles in a wet parking lot when we got there, but we loaded in. The rain had stopped. And by the time we were midway through the meeting, the skies were blue and it was a perfect day for a meeting. So like any other activity that you do, when you do it the second time, you can use your lessons learned from previous meetings that you ran. And in this case, we bought name tags. And in the past, what we did was printed name tags, and they were decals, and you would just stick them to a shirt when somebody came in. And even though they were in alphabetical order, it tended to be really cumbersome to try and get people through the door and into the meeting. So this time, we bought name tags and clips. And God bless my lovely wife, who spent 2 hours taking all the name tags that we printed and putting them together for people to have them and set them all out that morning in alphabetical order. And it was self-service for people who were pre-registered. So it made it go so much better. People who were pre-registered were just told to go over to the table in alphabetical order and pick up their name tag. And we do door prizes for our meetings. And what we typically do is hand out tickets, but it's a bit of a pain to get everybody a ticket on registration. So we printed numbers on their name tags, 1 through 180. And we were able to just randomize 1 through 180 and call out the numbers and give away our door prizes at the end of the day. So the name tag upgrade was a great success. And anybody who was a walk-in could just go over to the registration table and sign themselves in to the meeting. The other lesson learned that we had was, and also because of necessity, we knew that rain was in the forecast. We changed the game plan for the meeting and moved everything inside the hall where we were doing the presentations. This location, you actually are in a chapel, stained glass and everything. And the presentations take place on the stage and they set chairs out on the floor, but it doesn't have pews, it just has chairs. Well, you can get the building set up with round tables, and we did that this year, and we also served the meal inside the chapel. In the previous year, we served it outside. We used the same caterer and they came in partway through the event and we set up the food in the back. And everything worked out really well. So the one thing that I could say about that was they were a little loud. Somebody dropped a chafing dish and a couple other things while we got set up. And it did interrupt the speaker at the time. And I don't know if that was a great success because the people in the back looked a little perturbed, but at the end of the day, nobody really complained. They were all cordial about it. And that's the one thing I think we would probably have to discuss as a lesson learned if we choose to do this again. We had two featured speakers on the day. One was Judy Chen. Dr. Chen is from the USDA Beltsville Lab in Maryland. I honestly only heard bits and parts of her presentation. At one point, I had to go out and help with the setup on the outside and had a couple logistics things to work on. And I'm looking forward to taking the recording that we made of her presentation. And while I produce it, I get to listen to them anyway, so I'll be able to hear what she said. The feedback that I got from those, and I could tell from the questions afterwards, is that it seemed to be pretty interesting, and the question and answer session looked pretty good. The other feature on the day was Dr. David Gilley. He's from William Patterson University. He was doing a dry run of his presentation that he's going to do, or at least something like it, at Eastern Apiculture Society meeting coming up here in July. So David talked about swarming and the data that we were working that he used as a byproduct of our work on the New Jersey Swarm Report. He and Charlie Ilsley, who's been on the podcast previously, have teamed up to go through and do the statistics, and he has a student from William Patterson that helped put together the presentation and the metrics and statistics for the data that he produced. And his commentary was, which was a better predictor of swarming? Was it calendar days or grow degree days? And I won't spoil the answer, but his presentation was interesting. You know, you look at the data that he presents statistically, and at first I didn't quite understand it, but as he went through the explanation, it became clear, and it was a really neat data point presentation. So I know he's going to expand upon this and do even further. If you get to see him at Eastern Apiculture Society, if you're attending, I would highly recommend you sitting in his session. And we did record him, so if the recording came out well, we'll get that up on our YouTube channel also, for those of you who are not New Jersey bound. The two featured speakers spoke in the morning. They were done at noon. We let everybody go to lunch in that room, and they were able to visit the vendors who were also in the room. That's the other change that we had. We had a small number of vendors this year, so we could fit them in the venue. And then I did a lip balm and paste wax presentation. I had mentioned on previous episodes that I did this at our local chapter in preparation for presenting here. We made a command decision for me to not do that outside because I wanted to do it in conjunction with a projector and a presentation that showed how much was in the lip balm, like the ingredient list. So I ended up presenting from the stage. So I've covered the bulk of that meeting, but that's about halfway through the activities. There were a lot of other things that we did. We did the outside activities. We repeated our gadget garage, and I was kind of concerned with the people there that they would come and see the same thing they saw the year before, although we brought more gadgets. But the fact of the matter is there was a huge amount of interest, and a vast majority of the audience that was participating, there were 100 and, last I heard, unofficial count was 176 participants at this meeting, so it was pretty well attended. Lot of interest in the gadgets that we brought from the gadget garage. We had the book showcase again this year, where we brought books that you could look at and see whether you wanted to buy them or not. Before you bought them, you can go through them. But another neat feature we had was Jake Mathenius. He's the long-standing past state apiarist, and how do you even talk about what Jake has done for beekeeping in New Jersey? He started the EAS, Eastern Apiculture Society. He was past president of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. He started Western Apiculture Society, and I've said this before, it's not a stretch to say he's world-renowned for his work in beekeeping. He was a past member and is a life member of the Northwest New Jersey branch and has donated his beekeeping books back as far as he's been keeping bees to us in our library. And we had those on hand. And man, what a neat collection of stuff. It just is the nostalgia of beekeeping all the way back. And these aren't reprints. These were the originals. We had a hive on hand there. As I said, we transported one up, and Charlie Ilsley was kind enough to take on the hive inspection there. And like a previous meeting that we've done, we also did a dry run of honey tasting, and that was a big hit at this meeting too. We got everybody finished with the outside activities, brought them inside, did a short talk, Jeff Bird, on upcoming Eastern Apiculture Society, and Tim Schuler ran through the New Jersey Department of Agriculture lab capabilities, and also talked a little bit about beekeeping in the state in his state apiarist report. So that was the last thing on the agenda. We did our door prizes, closed out, and we called it a day. I will say that one of the things we learned with such a big audience was not everybody was pleased with the audio-visual presentations that we had. I have to say that I thought we had some hits and some misses. Rick Connect is one of our members at Northwest. He has a background in this. He does a lot of AV stuff, and he really knows wireless microphones, and he understands the projector systems and the computers and all that, and he did a spectacular job just carrying the day and getting people microphones working and all that stuff. We had a short debrief after the meeting, and we're to the point where there's so many people in the room for our meetings that the one screen projector with the presentations is probably not enough. There were enough people situated in the back that couldn't get close enough to the screen to see them. And especially, you can't control the presentations that people bring. Now, I've been doing presentations in corporate America for 15 years. So all the presentations that I put together for the meeting had very big types and very small amount of content on each slide, and just, you know, walked you through that on purpose. But our presenters didn't go that route, and people struggled to see the slides. The other side of this is, in that room, it's a chapel, sometimes the echo, even though the room is pretty good acoustically, just didn't carry. And especially when lunch was being brought in or people were talking in the back, there was a bit of a struggle. So even with all the AV tech that we had, we still could do a better job, and we were having conversations about that. But I will say that Janet Katz spoke to open the meeting. She's the New Jersey Beekeepers Association president, and she did not have slides. She was just going through state business meeting information, and we were able to take a spare camcorder and put it on her and take the feed and put it into the mixer and put it through the projector and put it up on the screen. So if you were sitting in the back and Janet was way up in the front, you couldn't really see her. You could see her like a chest shot from the bust up her head on the screen and understand what she was saying. And I thought that was really a good feature and a good call for Rick. He set that up. And so that was a hit. Everybody really enjoyed that. I think what we're talking about is how do we daisy chain a number of projectors and set them up and get a camera sitting right on the speaker so that maybe you do a picture box where the speaker is big and the presentation is big. Yeah, that's a little bit ambitious for a local beekeeper meeting, don't you think? But you know what? You got to do it right. And we're having those conversations. So, otherwise, there were a couple other little things, but for the most part, like the year before, for whatever reason, the gods have blessed us. We went through without a hitch, and the day just really went off perfectly. Lunch was great. Breakfast went well. Registration was better this year. And one of the things is one of our members, her name is Deborah, came up with a way to do signs for everything, and she had everything labeled. The door prizes were labeled. Even at one point, the coffee that was brought into the venue, it was hard to tell which one was decaf, hot water, and whatever. And she had signs ready to go and wrote them on there. And it really helped the situation. So I have to say, hats off to the Northwest crew for running this meeting. They did a spectacular job in setting up, tearing down, and just catering to make it a completely successful event. So I think I took a little bit of a risk by starting the episode with that summary, because maybe you did or didn't find that enthralling, but now we've come to the local hive report, which I think anybody who's a beekeeper will be able to follow along and find interesting. I do think meeting recaps and some of that is of interest to folks, especially if you're part of an association, whether you're an attendee to these beekeeper meetings, and you should be, or someone running those. Hopefully you can appreciate all that goes on for those. I wanted to talk about the two Sunday activities, all-day activities that I did, work in bees. The first one was Sunday, April 17th, and the second one was Sunday, April 24th. But prior to that, I had to make sure that I had everything ready to go for when I was going to be able to work the bees. So the week preceding Sunday, that Saturday, April 16th, where I had the field meeting, and then Sunday where I worked my own bees, I did all the prep for the outdoor meeting and all the prep for my hive stuff. And some of the bigger tasks were getting my hives prepped, frames and boxes and bottom boards and things like that for the activities, and planning exactly how it was going to go about it. Since we picked up two packages for the mentoring hives, I also picked up personally two packages for my local yards. I installed a package last year, and I had all that I need to do about installing packages. My preference would be to do splits and to build my own bees and not buy bees. But in the case this year, on Sunday, April 17th, I had two hives that I wanted to install that you couldn't put packages in. One is a Waray hive, and the other one was a Top Bar hive. So in order to put those out in the field, you have to put stands together. And I built two stands. And if you know, if you are a follower of the Beekeeper's Corner, I designed a hive stand out of PVC that's been out on the internet for a number of years. A lot of people, including my listeners, over the years have sent me pictures because we shared the design and have built their own. But in this case, I didn't want to build them out of PVC. I had some spare 4x4 posts in the garage and extra wood. And it just made sense to go ahead and fabricate them out of what I had. I know that some folks get a little squeamish about using treated wood for bees. I'm sorry, I don't understand what the fuss is about. I know the stuff is methyl ethyl death and blah, blah, blah. But the bees are in the box. They're not. Yes, they land on the hive stand, but come on. I'm just not going there. Maybe it's me. Don't write me hate mail if you have all kinds of ideas about that. But I took the risk. Sue me. So I was really happy with the designs. I'll have to take pictures of those and post them up to the blog that you could see them. Somewhere along the line, someone did a deck with Trex-style materials. That's that plastic wood thing that never rots. And I don't know how, but I came across a bunch of boards, and I'll never turn anything down like that. And that is what I had made some of my top bar hive that I created. I used those as the footers because they would never rot if they were sitting down on something wet. Well, I incorporated the extra boards that I've had laying around forever in my hive stand for my top bar when I built that out. So I was pretty happy with the way both of those came out, and I spent a lot of time making sure the cuts were straight and that the hives would be level if they were set on them, because both of those hives use top bars with no foundation, and it is really important that you set them both out in a field and get them level. So much so that I leveled them, but I'm concerned that with rain and settling, they're going to adjust. So when I go back this weekend, I'm taking my level and I'm going to check them again and make sure that I got them where they need to be, so that when bees are building out the initial comb off these frames, they're building them straight and don't have them canted at an angle. So I should talk about my top bar. In the past, what I've used is typical Kelly type F frames. If you go in the Kelly Bee Catalog, which I happen to have one sitting here next to me so I could talk about this, they have a bunch of different frame types. They have style N, style D, style S, SGF, SGX. I don't know what the letters signify, but they are all different in the way that they load foundation in them. Or, in my case, I'm using Style F. Style F frames are the ones that require no foundation. The bottom of the top bar has been beveled to provide a starting place for the bees to draw their own foundation. So typically when you buy these from Kelly, you buy the top bar with the beveled edge underneath it. And sometimes people run a bead of wax to help the bees start. And then they have the side bars and the bottom bar underneath it. I'm running a top bar, which has no sides and bottom. So I'm just using the top bar. But the top part is supposed to have the two vertical side bars. And in a conventional frame, you know those tabs come up and insert and lock in, and then you nail and cross nail those to hold them in. Well, I don't have those. I have no sidebars. So if you take the two and you put them in the top of the top bar and you slide them together, they don't maintain bee space because they don't have those shoulders that rest together in a normal frame. So what I did was I took all of the top bars that I intended to use for this top bar hive. I brought them in the house downstairs to the workshop and I drilled holes through them where those bars would slide in that little slot. And then to make up the space, the width of where the bar shoulders would be, I cut a dowel using my little scroll saw. I cut 50 of them times two because there's two ends to each frame and I had 50 frames prepped. And then I squeezed them in the hole, and now when they sit together, the dowels laying horizontally touch end to end. Yeah, I'm going to have to take a picture of this so everybody understands what I'm talking about if you didn't follow that. But now what I want you to picture is, like every Langstroth hive, when you set those frames in and you slide them together, the frames, the top bars, let me back up a minute. In a typical top bar hive, when you put the top bars in, they're wider than a conventional Langstroth frame, and they touch. There's no space for the bees to come through. They're all trapped underneath the bottom bars. That's not how it works in my hive. I'm using conventional hive, Langstroth tops, and I put these dowels so that when you set them together, the bee space is the same as if it would be in a Langstroth hive. Everybody following me? Hope you are. So why would I do that? Why did I make my top bar so that the bees could pass through and come above the top bars? Because my top bar is designed to fit three boxes on top sitting next to each other. And my intention is that the bottom part, the conventional area where the top bar hive bees live, is the brood chamber. And I could set three honey boxes sitting alongside each other on top to be the honey box. And so therefore, I want the bees to be able to pass through the top bars and into the conventional Langstroth boxes that are on top. So hold on to that. I'll come back to that a little bit later. So all that prep stuff out of the way, my first objective on April 17th, that Sunday, was to do a hive inspection of the bees that were out in my local yard, meaning right outside my back door. And then I was going to go over to the farm, the other yard that I have, and install my packages and be ambitious and do a split. And if everything went well with the hive inspection for the hive that's outside in my backyard, I would do a split of that hive too and take the bees over to the farm. And that was my objective for that Sunday. So, in Kevin fashion, I brought my camera out. And as I said, I have at my disposal my son's GoPro camera. So I put it on and I went out there. And when you're wearing a GoPro and when you're filming, I don't like to wear a suit. It just gets in the way of me trying to talk through a veil. And I had joked the Saturday before that, on the 16th, that I worked bees all day. Remember, I installed two packages and we did three hive inspections and we did all that work and I never got stung once. But I had joked on camera that day that on Monday and Tuesday, I was attending a conference for work and I was a featured speaker on Monday. And the featured speakers in this conference that we were doing at work are filmed on BMS, that's who I work for, Bristol-Myers Squibb, BMS TV globally. And it would be really bad if I got stung. Well, I made it through Saturday, but the first thing on Sunday, I opened a hive and bang, I got stung on the right eye. And I've done that before, and I got stung right on the outside corner, not in the eye, but the corner of the eye, right underneath my eyebrow, and I knew for a fact that I was going to swell. I said, boy, that's not going to go well. So I'll tell you what happened there. But I set up the cameras. I started to do the inspection. I was going to talk about my objective. And just to remind everybody about that hive, I've said it a bunch of times, but I'll say it again. Had a bottom board, a full deep, a medium-sized box in the middle, and a full deep on top. It was heavy as could be. And my previous looks at it by putting food on it, it had tons and tons and tons of bees and resources. So my objective was, I really wanted to take the middle box out, the medium size box, out and do a split with it and take it over to the farm. That was my objective. So I smoked the front of the hive. I lifted the inner cover or the outer cover and gave it a little smoke. And then I stepped up and my eyebrows were even with the top of the box. And when I went to take the inner cover off or the outer cover off, bang, I got stung like right away. Like I didn't even get it lifted halfway up and I got stung. They immediately came out. Now, one thing about this hive, the bees originated from Charlie Ilsley's yard. They're a little hot, hotter than any hive I've ever had, meaning they're pretty aggressive. And I don't know why they would ever be aggressive. The nectar flow is starting. They got plenty of bees or whatever. But Sharon went out there earlier in the week and they buzzed her right out of the yard. So I got to take care of this queen probably. So anyway, I opened the box, got stung right away, went back to the house and I put a veil on. Because I figured, you know, if I get stung in the other eye, I'm done. I won't be able to see the next day. So damage was already done there. I smoked the box, and what was on the top of this box was a Mountain Camp feeder that I made, a ring, and it had some food in it. I had fed a sugar block and pollen patties. So I pulled it off, and I looked in the top box, the top deep. It was loaded with bees. You could not put another bee in the box, and it was loaded with honey and resources. So I went through about five or six frames there, looked and see what they had. I wanted to know if there was brood in this top box, and there was not. It was still completely loaded with food from the winter. I went to pull it off, and I put the hive tool in it and went to lift the box. And it was really heavy, and it didn't budge. But then it finally broke free from the propolis, and it got up about 2 inches, and it stopped. And it stopped jarringly, like I didn't expect that. And as I went to lift it, I went to pull it up, it stopped, and I couldn't get it to go, and I immediately let it go, and it went back down. So, wow, that's strange. And when I let it down, as I was lifting it, some bees were coming up onto the edge, and I let it down, and I crushed a couple bees. I heard them crunch. I was like, oh, that's not good karma. So I said, well, maybe I didn't get it right. I pried it again, and I went to lift it off. And again, same thing, but this time I didn't drop it as hard. But I set it back down, and it was really heavy. It's loaded. It's got 10 frames in it, and it's loaded with about 8 of them with honey. So it weighs about 80, 90 pounds. And I set it back down, and unfortunately, there was no easy way to put it back down, and I crushed some bees. And I still could not get it free from the box below it and didn't know why. So I walked around to the front of the hive, which is where it seemed to be stuck, and I pried it up and I started to lift it, and it got stuck, and I was able to bend over and look at the seam underneath and see that the bars from the top box were stuck to the bars underneath, to the top bars of the hive body underneath. Not the brightest move. When I had that gap open, all the bees that got crushed released alarm pheromone, and everybody called to order, and they poured out of the box, and I'm wearing a veil and a short sleeve shirt and got stung 3-4 times. I'm telling you this so you can not make that same mistake. You know, look, I'm equal opportunity to explain my mistakes. I got nothing to hide here. It is what it is. It was a dumb move. But what I did realize is that I had to do something in order to free the box. I couldn't do this again. So I had to set the box back down. And damn it, I crushed some more bees, but I had no choice. And they chased me out of the yard. Literally. I went all the way back to the house. I went through the foyer. I went out to the front of the garage. I walked down the driveway and they chased me all the way. Eventually, they gave up. I didn't get stung again. I went back in the house and I put on a full bee suit and I went back out to the garage and I got a couple wedges and a piece of wire. So my objective was to get this box off. I was not to be deterred, but I have to say with you, Kevin Moment, damn, this sucked. First hive of the year in my yard. I was so, after having such a great day on Saturday, I was so excited to go out and work my bees. My bees, not the mentoring, my bees. And I got lit up the first day. I was so mad. I was like, I was so zen and wanted to have a great experience to begin the 2016. And it started off with utter and ridiculous frustration. I was so mad about that. So my game plan, full suit, was to go in, pry the hive, but this time not drop the box. I put a couple wedges underneath the front edge. And then I took a piece of wire and put it through and then snaked it back and forth between the frames and cut what was attaching the frames from the top box to the frames of the box underneath it. And somewhere along the line, I was also able to get in there with my hive tool, because now I could lean in and not worry about getting stung, and pry some of those frames down and wedge them off. So I was successful. I broke all the frames free. 9 out of the 10 frames were stuck to the ones below it. And I was able to take the box off and put it aside and cover it. And the trauma was over and everything kind of settled down. Post-mortem on this, I know what happened. I had mentioned this was a box I got from Charlie. Well, the box was wonky. I don't know where he got it from, but it should be burned. The difficulty with the box is not only was it not square, it was homemade, somebody made it and it was a little ajar, but whoever cut the rabbits cut them wrong. They cut them too deep. And so the brushy mountain frames that I put in, they sit too low in the box. And what ended up happening is they built burr comb on the top of the frames to whatever was above it, my feeder, and they built and attached burr comb and propolis from the bottom of the frames to the frames underneath because they violated bee space. So I remedied this later. I'll talk about that when I talk about what my further reaction was for this hive. But look, my objective was I still had to go over to the farm and take care of those bees that day and install my packages. So I had to cut bait. I got my hive tool. I pried that medium box off. And I took this box and I put it back on and I buttoned everything up and I went inside and licked my wounds and got ready for my afternoon session to go over to the farm. It was utter frustration for the start of the year and I was really hoping that it wasn't going to keep going that way for the rest of the day. So I had had enough of that box for the day and I was going to deal with it next week. And I will say that I've added those wedges to my new beekeeping kit. Or to my existing beekeeping kit and that piece of wire, they're now going to travel with me if I ever get myself in that situation. And I cannot, I don't get paid for these things, but I cannot stress again how nice my beekeeping suit is. The brand I use is Ultra Breeze, and I promise you I have never been stung through the thing, and I highly recommend it. In fact, if you watch that video, somebody in the audience, the video I talked about in the first segment, somebody in our beekeeping group was wearing that, and I call it out first thing on the video because I really believe in them. I bought another one recently from Brushy Mountain. I should have bought a Ultra Breeze. I don't know what I was thinking. It's nice, but it's not as good. But for that day, because I knew what I was getting into, I put the Ultra Breeze in. They were buzzing me menacingly the whole time, and I didn't get stung once through that suit. So I'm really pleased with that. So let's go ahead and talk about what happened at the farm. I took a break for a while. I got my composure. I packed all my stuff up, and I moved that hive, packed it up, got it ready to go, put it on the trailer, and I drove over to the farm. So the first objective was to put that box out on a hive stand. And I have a medium box in reserve from last year that was just loaded with honey. I kept it for the purpose that I knew in the springtime I was going to do this split and take that medium and use it. So the medium box was closed up, transported, and set on a hive stand. And I took the top off and I put this honey box on top of it. And it's sitting over on the farm on that day with a bottom board closed off mostly. I had taped the entrance all the way except for a small little hole. And it had this honey box put on top of it and a top cover, and I walked away and left it sit there. So the million-dollar question is, where was the queen from that hive? I didn't know the answer to that. But I really wasn't concerned, because what I did know when I had looked in that medium box before I ripped it off of there was that there was brood in there with eggs and such. I had looked at a couple frames, found the brood, and just left it at that. So I either did or didn't have the queen. To me, it didn't matter. I'll give you the answer to that a little bit later when I come back, because I inspected that hive the following weekend when I went back there. So the first objective after getting that hive settled was set up my Waré hive and get the bees in it from the package that I installed, that I wanted to install. So as I said before, you can't use a dump method because the box that the bees come in, the cage, doesn't fit. And there's a unique feature about the Waré hive that I purchased. It came from Sweet Valley Hives. It comes with a ring, a 1-inch ring that sets between the boxes, and it has a notch cut in it, very similar to the way you'd see a notch in an inner cover. The notch is the perfect size for you to take a queen cage and slide it in, and that's its purpose. So I took the hive package apart, looked at the queen, she looked good, released the cork, and took the candy end and dipped it in the package of bees so it was covered, and put it inside the hive and then slid the end out of that hole. Now you would think that you would take it and slide it through the hole. I didn't do it that way. I put it in the hive and slid it so it sealed the hole. But it was laying on top of the frames. And then what I did was took the package and dumped them in on top of those frames and let them cover the queen. And then I put the box all back together and closed it up. So I did tape the entrance closed so that the bees could not get out. That was my objective. And there were some bees flying around in the air. They all collected on the front of the hive right where the queen cage was and covered the end of the queen cage on the outside. There was probably a cup and a half, 2 cups of bees by the time I left, gathered on the outside of the hive. And I did my best to get some of them. I used a piece of paper and scraped them up off, and I dumped them down on the bottom, and I opened it a little, and some of them scurried in. But most of them went back up and covered the queen, and I was okay with leaving him outside. So one of the things I want to make clear is I had taped that hive off closed. I did not want the bees to abscond. That was the lesson we learned from the top bar on the day before. So both of these packages, the package I installed in the Ware and the one I'm about to tell you in my top bar, the hives were completely sealed off so the bees couldn't exit once I got them in there. So I think that went pretty smoothly. I didn't see any instructions or have any understanding of how to install a package in that box. I know there was a demo on their website that showed them how to do it, but I've never seen anybody actually physically do it, and I think it went pretty well. And I recorded that. I think I recorded that. So if I could find that, I'll bring that up and put it up on the YouTube channel also. I have a plethora of videos on recording that I have to produce and put out there. So moving to the package bar, to the package install on the top bar hive. I tried to start this hive before, and I had taken some of these top bars and put them in conventional hives so that they could build some comb out for me. And over time, they got damaged. Things got moved around. I had one frame with comb on it, and that's what I put in the hive. So I took the package apart, took the top off, took the can out, got the queen out, and looked at the queen. And the queen had that little plastic strip that kept her from falling down inside. It was stapled to the top. I used that to my advantage. I took the cork out, took that strap, wrapped it around my top bar, pinned it with a pin, and dipped it in the bees, and then set it inside the hive and let her hang there with a bunch of bees around her, surrounding the cage. I took the package and I dumped it in. And like I said, I followed Wyatt Magnum's instructions. I spread the bees out and helped them to get up the sides so that they would go over and crawl to the frames and cover the queen. And then I quick put the top bars in. Now, remember, my top bars are open, so I had to have a means by which I kept the bees in there. I had prepped three inner covers, taped the holes off, taped the entrances, and I set them over top of the hive. So one of the things you got to do with these bees is feed them. I neglected to say that I put a can in the Ware hive and set that there so that they could eat from it. And in the top bar, I used a large spackle plastic bucket, and I poured liquid in it and floated some things and set that in the bottom of the hive. That's how I started the journey with this, and I moved the follower board out so that I could fit that. But I didn't really like that idea, so I made some corrections on that later in the week. So the bees are in the box. All the top bars are set. I lined up three top covers, inner covers, on it, and then I put the lid over top of it and sealed it all off. I found out I have a little crack on the end the bees were able to exit, so I pushed a couple of them back in and taped it, and the entrance was taped, and I walked away. Done. Good to go. Actually, I think I messed that up. I did not have top bars or inner covers available. And what I found out was that the bees were able to get through the frames and walk along the roof and be able to come down. There was a gap where they could get out, and they were all flying. So I ended up going home and getting inner covers and coming back and putting them on the top of the hive and dumping all the bees back in as best I could. You have to forgive me. It's been almost 2 weeks since I did this, so I have to kind of remember how it actually played out. So during the week, I got cold feet about the way that worked, and I want to be able to feed those hives. So I was able to go in the garage and get some feeders and prep them. I have the Kelly-style feeders. They're in a shallow box. I really like those type of feeders, hive top ones. And I had said a moment ago I did not like the way that the brood chamber that I set up was really expanded so that the food could sit on the floor of the hive. So what I did was went back midweek, pulled the inner covers off. Oh, I should say that I sent Sharon back on Wednesday during that week, and she pulled the tape and let the bees out. And everything was good to go. They were not going to abscond after that point. So I went back on Thursday night. I had an opening after I have soccer practice on Wednesday, so I couldn't do it. And I took the inner covers off, and I put hive top feeders over top of the hive. And I pulled that box out, the spackle thing, and I moved the follower board, which divides the hive, in closer so that the space the bees have to work on inside the top bar hive is the equivalent width of a Langstroth hive. Previously, with the follower board, which, if you don't know what a follower board is, it's a solid board that goes through the hive that divides the hive in parts. And the follower board allows the bees to maintain part of the chamber, and the other part of the chamber is empty. So the follower board, the hive is three Langstroth boxes wide, and it was two. That was the space I had given the package originally. I pulled that feeder out, and I moved the follower board so that they occupied one-third of the space. My logic there was, I really want to collapse the space that they have at their disposal so that they can do a better job at keeping it warm. And as I speak, as I'm recording this, it's Friday night, the 29th at 9:30. It's 42 degrees outside, so there are still some cold nights going on here in April. And it might go down into the high 30s tonight. So on Thursday, I went back to check both those hives and see how the queens were doing. I found all the bees clustered on the outside of the Ware hive. I pulled the queen cage out to check. No queen in there. So the queen's been released. My Ware hive features a board that comes off with a window behind it, and I could see, without having to go into the hive, that all the bees are clustered on the frames inside the top box, and everything was good. So I pulled it out, and then there's a little insert that goes in that plugs the hole, and I plugged the hole. But first what I did was I blew on the hive, and I smoked it a little bit on the outside, and all the bees retracted in that hole and went inside the hive. And for the handful that didn't, I just took a piece of paper and scraped them a little bit till they were walking on the paper. And then I tapped them on the bottom entrance, and they all walked inside the hive. There were a couple stragglers, but my assumption is they'll find their way in, or they'll just keep hanging out. What I wanted to do is make sure I got them inside the hive, because that little cluster that was hanging outside the bee cage, they started to build a little bit of wax on the outside of the hive, and I don't want that. I didn't want them to try and take up residence there. So, Thursday afternoon check, after installing them on Sunday, Ware hive, check, good condition. Queen is out, bees are building comb. I could see comb through the window, and the vast majority of the package is inside the hive based on what I could see hanging in there. And they were coming and going and bringing forage. I could see bees bringing back pollen. So that hive is operational and it's good to go. I have a decision to make because I have no way to feed that hive other than hive style feeders that like cans and whatever I put in. And I think from the website that I got it from, there was commentary that you don't have to feed these hives. They're small enough in their footprint that if you get them going on a nectar flow, they're able to fend for themselves. So we'll see how that plays out. My preference would be not to feed it and let it be au naturel. So we'll see. So checking the top bar after making some of the adjustments, the bees in there look good. I could see them coming and going. Same idea. They were bringing back pollen, and my guess is that the queen was released. Let me just put that point to it, and maybe she's occupying that single frame, and hopefully she'll get to laying. And one of the things I noticed is that the queen cage was hanging in there. I should have removed it earlier. I wanted to give them a couple days and not interrupt that hive, but what they did was built wax on that first frame that the queen was hanging on. And they built wax and incorporated the cage in it. And I didn't want to leave it there, so when I pulled the cage out, I wrecked the wax that they built. I'm sure they could repair it, but I wasn't too happy in having to do that. So I set the follower board and closed up shop and put that hive all together, and it looks really good. My intention was to get back there this week and
poor feet on them, and I just didn't get to it. So I'm out of town this weekend. That's why I'm trying to record here on a Sunday. And I don't know if I'll get over there till Sunday to be able to feed them. I'm out of town tomorrow, so we'll see what happens. But I want to get some food on them. The top bar I am going to feed because I really want them to get into the wax making mode and fill that entire box out. And they have a lot of work to do to get that thing filled. So that was the midweek activity. Now let me tell you what happened, or the first week activity and the midweek stuff that I was taking care of. Let me go ahead and roll into what happened on weekend two, which is April 24th. This is the Sunday after the state meeting. And I was exhausted that morning. I wasn't too eager to go over there, but I knew I had to go over and take care of business. So the number one objective there was, well, there were two major, but the number one objective was, last year I installed a package hive, or a conventional Langstroth box from a package. Slow down, Kevin. A little tired, but want to get through all this. And so I knew that box was banging with bees because I had fed it some in the spring and I knew it was really going. And I know that if I don't split that hive, I'm going to end up with a swarm. It's going to swarm on me. And they were in two deep boxes, and that's all they had. I hadn't done any reversals or any additional bee boxes with those. So they were crowded in there for sure. So when I went to split that box, that was my second activity because I wanted to bring the split back to my house. So I had to do that last. So I did a cursory check on that Sunday of the top bar and the Waré. They look good. I took a peek at my polystyrene hive, which is two deeps, two mediums coming out of winter. And that box is banging. It's going really well. It's loaded with bees. I haven't done an inspection on that. In fact, I don't think I'm going to. I know it's really, really good shape. I'm just going to keep adding boxes on it and make it a tower hive. That's going to be my honey producer. And I think this weekend I'm going to start putting boxes on it and see what happens. Because I noticed from inspections on that Sunday that bees are starting to peck out some of the frames with nectar. They're getting it from somewhere. I don't think we're on the full nectar flow, but I do know that the early nectar is starting to be packed away in these hives. So before I could do a split on that package hive from 2015, I had to go check on the mediums and see how that was doing. So my number one objective with that hive was, did it have the queen or not? Remember, I didn't know the answer. So I did a full inspection of it. The answer came relatively quickly. The honey box was loaded with bees, so that was the good news. The bees had dispersed themselves through the boxes. And one of the things I did was brought another box of built-out comb, medium, that I could put on there for them to work on. But I had mixed feelings about doing that. If I found a queen, then that box was going to take off. If I did not, I don't think it was a good idea to put on it, and I'll explain the logic in a second. So I popped the top box off and put it down, and I went through the bottom box and started looking. And what I saw was caprood, 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 no eggs. There was no evidence that there was a queen in there laying. But what I did find on frame number three were two queen cells built out, and they were just closing them up. And inside were two big, juicy larvae ready to go, capping them. So by that afternoon, they probably capped those and made queen cells out of them. In frame number five and frame number six, I found capped queen cells that probably got capped moments before I opened. So I know what was going on there is that hive that the previous weekend was prepping to swarm, or during the week they capped these off and they're making queens. So I did a full inspection of the box. No queen present. So they're going to raise a queen, and they're well on their way. One of the things I'll do this weekend is go back there And if I go a little bit further, I didn't want to, my objective was to do a split, not go through this box in full. But I'm going to go through the box even better and look and see if there's queen cells that I could harvest out of there. And I might literally pull, even though they're a medium, I might pull a frame out if it has queen cells and pair it with a frame from one of my other hives that's banging and put it in the queen castle and start my way to a new nuke with that. If there's 5-6 queen cells in there, I'm going to harvest a couple of them and I'm going to start a new population with that. Why not? So we'll see what Sunday brings for that. Now, it's supposed to rain, 90% chance of rain on Sunday, so who knows whether I'll get a chance to do that. But we'll take that as it goes. So that box, as far as I'm concerned, it's good to go. And since I did not find a queen, I did not put an extra box on top. So I said I would come back to the logic of this. There were probably 4 or 5 frames in there that had nothing but a carpet of bees ready to emerge. And so while those queens are going to be capped and gestate and then emerge and then go get mated and come back and get started, any bees that are old, coming out of winter, whatever, are going to expire. Eventually, there's attrition. But there's so much potential of new bees coming there that whatever the attrition is, they'll be supplemented by bees that are emerging. But eventually, that hive, because it has no queen, is not going to have a burst in population because there's no place for, there's no queen to lay and do whatever. So what I see is the bees that were emerging over the week since I put it there, they've put honey or put nectar and pollen in the spaces. So this is pretty typical of a hive that you did a split that are waiting for a queen. The bees have to do something. All the brood is capped. There's nothing for them to do. They become honey producers. I might reconsider this and put a honey box on top and see if I can get them to go do honey. But my logic of not putting it on there right away is, back to what I said, it's still cool at night. And I don't want to put a box on the top for the heat to rise in that has nothing but open frames. It is drawn comb, but no resources. And maybe chill the bees, right? So I'd rather keep them compact. I think that's more important than me getting honey in the box. And remember, the second box on that stack is just loaded with honey. So what do I stand to gain? I'm more about building a population than I am trying to get honey out of a box that's trying to get itself situated.
So mission accomplished with the medium hive. I think it's in good shape. And again, if I get a chance, I'll harvest some queen cells. Hopefully I'll be able to get in that window where I could maybe pull a couple. So now let me go back to the last operation that was going to take place there, which is the split of that package hive from 2015. I mentioned earlier that I had an 8-frame hive that I had to prep. The hive had wax moths in it. What a pain to clean that out. But I cleaned it all out and I loaded it with comb and I'm ready to go. So I brought this hive to set up and I pulled 8 frames out of the top box. So I have 2 deeps and I did not want to take the queen. But I needed to have brood with eggs so that when I populate this box and bring it back to the house, they'll raise a queen just like I talked about in the all mediums. So the first frame of 10 in that box was 2 faces of capped honey. Left it in there. Actually, no, I pulled it out and I put it in the 8-frame. That'll be their food reserve. The second one was a mixed frame of capped honey, uncapped nectar, and a huge sheet of pollen on the inward side, which led me to believe correctly that I was going to find brood on the next frame. So that's the supermarket. I took that and I put it in my split box, which is the 8-frame. I went through the next 3 frames, all brood frames. The outside one was carpet, capped brood, took it. That's going to be the population. By the way, I took the bees with them too.
And then I went through the next couple frames all the way through to the last two. And I found capped brood, uncapped brood, resources, and eggs. And I took 8 frames out of that and left 2 in there. So the 2 that I left were food style frames. I moved them to the middle of the box. And then I had brought 8 frames of drawn comb and I put them in to replace the ones that I took out. And I closed that box up and I left it be. So what do I know? I'm in the perfect situation for that hive to expand for spring. In the bottom box is 10 frames full of bees, full of resources, and the queen is in there. And in the top, they have 2 frames in the middle with some resources and 8 frames surrounding it with drawn comb, and it's ready to go. Now, I had my commentary there a moment ago about creating a chamber above the brood chamber here that's open and heat's going to get wasted by going up in it. There's no rhyme or reason. My logic is illed. But I wanted to give access for the bees to move up. And I think that day and the next couple days, the queen would probably come up into that area and start laying brood. And then they would cover the brood and keep it warm. Now, I didn't say the one thing that I found. I kept this secret. I had a feeder box on top of that hive. The feeder box is about 4 inches deep. And I had fed a block of sugar and I had fed pollen patty to this hive to get it prepped for lots of bees for the spring. Well, the bad news is they used that space since they were a little bit crowded and they built comb all in that box. So unfortunately, it was lined with comb that they expended energy and the queen had been up in there and it was loaded with bees and it was all drone. There were probably 4-inch high by 12-inch long, 6 or 8 runs of comb sitting in that feeder box, all drone brood, covered with a plethora of bees taking care of the brood. So I pulled that box off, and I pulled half the bees out of it, and I put it in the 8 frame so that I would have them, and I took the rest with me, and some of the stragglers I put back into the mother hive that I had just harvested everything with. I had 2 outer covers. I set this feeder box in an outer cover, and then I put another outer cover over it and transported it back to the house, bees and all. I was really hopeful that there was brood in here and not just drone brood. I was hoping maybe what I was going to find is uncapped brood and eggs. And what I thought I'd do is take those out, put them in, rubber band them to frames, and put them in my queen castle and let them raise some bees with the population of nurse bees that came along with that box. Unfortunately, when I got it home and went through it verbatim, they were all drone brood. Every single run of those were drone brood. There was no conventional brood in there with the eggs that I could harvest. And I checked to see if the queen was in there. She was not. So I took all those bees and I dumped them in the 8 frame, which I put back out in the yard. And now I have a bottom board with the 8 frame box with all the frames that I harvested out of the top of that 2015 package hive. And it's loaded with bees so that they'll be able to keep things warm. And they're going to start the population all over again. I have a second box ready to go. And in the next 2 weeks, when it warms up, it has drawn comb and I will put it on. And I have the feeder ready to go. And I'm going to start feeding this box. But we're about to get into the full-on nectar flow. And I think we're going to be in good shape. Now, a couple weeks ago, someone who had some excess pollen patties gave them to me. On both of the splits, I'm going to put pollen patties. Why not? I have them laying around. They're doing no good sitting in the cabinet. So let them eat them. If they have good pollen, even if it's artificial pollen. My preference would be to let them have nature's pollen, and if it's available to them, they'll use it, but I see no harm in giving them pollen patties and having it right inside the hive. So I'm looking at the time. I know how long I've been, but I'm almost done. Let me go ahead and wrap everything up on the hive inspections. So as I mentioned, I transported that 8-frame hive and I put it out on one of the pads at my house. And the reason I did it is I followed Tim Schuler's methodology about how to do a split. Now, if you go back to the episode where I had Tim on as a guest last time, he talked about putting a queen excluder in between the boxes and letting them equalize to the brood and then taking the top box off. And there you would know that you had already trapped, if you checked, your queen in the bottom and you weren't taking her with you, or vice versa, depending on how you wanted to do it. I knew looking at that there was a lot of brood in the top box, and I peeked in the bottom box, and there's a lot of brood in the bottom box, and I was okay to make the split. The reason I brought them home is because if I had left it in the farmyard, I think a lot of the bees that were part of that would have flown back to the mother hive. And I wanted them with me, so I brought them back to my house. So they're out in the yard, and now I have two hives. This new 8-frame that I just created. And remember, the original hive that I started with the weekend before is out there. So one more, it's like Steve Jobs, one more thing. 2 seasons back, I bought a hive scale. It's actually a grain scale. Bob Kloss and I both bought them, and I never deployed mine. It's been sitting out in my garage, and I've never had a chance to roll the thing out there. Well, that weekend, I rolled it out there, and I set it up on one of the pads. I took the equipment that I wanted to put on that hive that I did the split, the mean and nasty hive. It had 2 boxes full of bees. Remember, I took the medium out, but the other 2 boxes were chock full. It needs more space, or it's going to swarm. So I wanted to add a box to it. I have a hive stand that I have that stuff sitting on. So I set the scale up, put the hive stand on it, and put the brick that I use on the top on there and weighed it. It was 35 pounds. Then I transferred the entire hive onto the scale itself and weighed it, and the total weight was 175 pounds. So what I know is the 2 boxes that were originally on that hive, the bottom board, the inner cover, the roof, and the equipment I added to it to make a full stack weighed 140 pounds, and then my hive stand and the block on top was 35 additional. So the entire weight is 175. So now, this weekend, at some point, I'll go back out there and I'll weigh the hive again, and I'll be able to tell how much it's gaining each week. The other thing is I added my broodminder to that hive. That's the humidity and temperature sensor that I bought. And I took my first reading. It was 93 degrees, and I forget the humidity level. The other thing that I did with this hive is, remember, I had this problem with this wonky box. So I took the wonky box, and I switched it. I put it over top of the bottom board, and I switched the bottom box to the top box. So even though that thing is messed up, at least the frames hanging down too low in the box won't get sealed to the top. Now, I don't know if I've solved all my woes, because I think those frames sit too low in the cradle and that there's too much space. At some point, I have other boxes in my garage. I'm going to go out when I get time, and I'm just going to eliminate that box, and I'm going to light a match to it for the moments that it caused me and get rid of it. Or maybe I'll give it back to the beekeeper if he wants it. But I want it out of rotation. But for now, I've solved the problem by moving it to the bottom. So the other thing you might note, if you've ever seen my videos, is that somewhere along the line, I won a hive, and somebody painted with a bunch of black splotches, and it looks like a cow. I love that box. I never had the heart to paint it gray like all the boxes that I try to standardize. I put that back on top of the box. So when you watch videos in the future, you'll see that the quote-unquote gateway hive has returned. It has made its return. So let me do the tally here. We'll start with the local yard. On hive pad number two, they're sitting on top of the hive scale are two deeps full of bees and tons of resources, and a third deep box, the gateway hive, with all drawn comb, and that hive is really good to go. On hive pad number one is the 8-frame hive, and I'm going to start feeding that next week, and we'll get that going. Over at the farm, I have the polystyrene hive sitting up front, two deeps, two mediums, full of bees, honking good. Right behind it, I have the 2015 package hive that I did a split, one deep full of bees, and another deep on top with drawn comb all the way through the 10, and hopefully they're moving up and taking residence. Sitting behind that is the Waré hive. Sitting behind that is the top bar hive. And sitting in the back of the apiary is the two medium boxes, one full of bees, one full of bees and honey. And right behind that is the hive stand with the spare box ready to go on it when the time comes due. So, wow, that's a local hive report of record, I think. Lot going on this spring. And hopefully you found this recount interesting. There was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of decisions to make. And I'm really excited about doing a next round of splits. I don't think I'm done. With the number of hives that I have somewhere, I think I'll be able to harvest some additional resources. I also have a certificate for a new queen. Somewhere along the line, I have to go fetch that. And my hope is to end up with a dozen plus hives by the time we go into fall and see what we can go through winter with. So it's been a really ambitious and active spring. Everything seems to be going well. And I'm looking forward to a little bit of a break and letting these hives just do what they're going to do over the next couple weeks. And I'm pretty excited about it. I know every time I get excited about something, something deters me from being excited. But this year I'm hoping no surprises and that things are just going to continue to roll along. I had my bad opening, but hopefully everything after that has been pretty calm and smooth sailing.
So I find myself sitting here about quarter after 10 after a long week. It's a Friday night. Wanted to get the recording done. And I'm getting up first thing in the morning to drive out to New York State for something. So I think I'm going to call an end and won't go into roundtable for this one, especially since it's been about an hour and a half recording. I do have two short little things to share, two or three, whatever comes to mind, before I close out, though. First one is I have to go back a couple episodes. In the beginning of the episode, there was a little snippet of Sharon singing. I don't think I ever mentioned it. And it came to mind after I listened to the episode that there's this long-running joke with Sharon and her brothers that they sing terribly on purpose. They just, I don't know why, every time they ever sing a song, they sing it in just the goofiest way. They never sing a song. You know, Sharon can sing, but she... So I had to mention that to everybody because I had to wonder what people thought. And I never said anything. I moved right past it in that episode. And I was kind of, after listening to it, laughing because I never made commentary. So anyway, Sharon can sing better than that. Just thought I'd give that little public service announcement out. A lot of you hopefully are going, wow, good, because that was terrible. And the funny thing is, she knows the song, she knows the words to every sappy 70s song, could sing it out loud when it comes on. She, like a cruise boat piano player, she sings about, come on, sing it out, you know. It's funny. Anyway, just a little Kevin moment there. The other thing I wanted to mention is Gary Fawcett from Kiwi Mana Buzz sent me over a note where we were parodied in a show called You're the Expert.
There's a show here locally in Philadelphia called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, National Public Radio, where they go through the national news and notes and they make fun of little snippets or whatever. Well, the topic of this thing, which seems to be, I won't pretend to think that this wasn't the original or which one, I don't know, but it's a type of game show where they bring things out and they ask the host what they think of them and various things. Listen to it and you'll see what I mean. But they had done the topic on bees. And in the middle, they pulled some snippets out of popular podcasts from beekeeping. And ours was featured. Kiwi Mono was featured. Craig Yearden's one was featured. I think there were other things throughout the episode. And they pulled a funny snippet out of mine. And I can go with the joke. It was pretty funny. So if you're interested in that, the URL is SoundCloud, all one word, soundcloud.com/you're the experts/bees. Yours, Y-O-U-R-E, dash, the, T-H-E, dash, expert, slash, bees, B-E-E-S. We'll put a link in the show notes, but give a listen. If you wanted to just cut to the chase and go to the part where we were featured, you go around 34-minute mark. It's like 34 and a half, somewhere in there. Anyway, it was great fun to listen to and hear yourself. And I won't give away the joke, so you'll have to go listen to it. Actually, as I'm recording this, I just looked at my inbox for Kevin at BK Corner, and I see there's a message from Ingo Scholler from Wales, UK. Hopefully, Ingo, I pronounced your last name correctly. If I didn't, forgive me on that. And you're the one that sent the information over that it's You Are the Expert by Chris Duffy. It's on the episode about bees on March 5th, 2016 with Dr. Noah Wilson Rich as their guest. It was found on an Apple Podcast app. So, again, I'll provide a link, but appreciate Ingo for you sending the email. And I read the other stuff about the bees and the snow flurries and things you have going on there. Pretty interesting. So anyway, folks, I said I was going to call it a close. Let me go ahead and do that. I probably have something else that I want to bring, but it'll have to wait till next time. Got to get to bed for my early start in the morning. I'm just happy to have sat down and put this together. I guess I'll leave you with what I always leave you with. Like our beloved bees, when beekeepers go together, we accomplish great things. Thanks for listening, everyone, and be well. Talk to you next time. Bye.